The Creative Writer's Way.
Writing is fundamental. It is our way. From stories come history. From history comes belonging. From belonging comes a sense of where we were, where we are, and where we are going. This is the foundation of civilization.
This is Dr. Schuyler Madison. Find your story at schuylermadison.com.
Hello, this is Dr. Schuyler Madison Fontana, and you're listening to The Creative Writer's Way. These podcasts are dedicated to helping you unfold and bring forward your creative self. And today's show is about finding creative inspiration, walking the labyrinth. And we'll be talking with Catherine Bickley, a licensed marriage and family therapist here in L.A., with an extensive background in theater. She's also passionate about helping people connect to their innate creativity. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi. Glad to be here. Thank you so much.
I'd like to just begin with the research that was done at Stanford that talks about how walking increases creative inspiration and a type of thinking that generates creative ideas. Steve Jobs was, you know, known for his walking. And there's a long history of writers who were avid walkers. So I'd like to begin with, if it's okay with you, Catherine, enlighten us a little bit on the backstory, a bit of the origins on this ancient meditative practice of walking a labyrinth.
Absolutely. Well, the labyrinth is an archetypal symbol that dates back more than 4,000 years, and it's found in almost every ancient culture worldwide, from Greece and Crete to Egypt, China, Peru, Ireland, and Scandinavia. It's even found in Native American tribes. Really, labyrinth in Europe is from Crete, and it's so interesting because despite the isolation of the early civilizations from one another, over thousands of years, only one archetypal design emerged. So the labyrinth
is amazing.
A vortex.
Yeah,
I know. So it's basically a vortex spiral pattern. And it's part of almost every religious tradition around the world. The origins are actually unknown, but there is some speculation that the pattern for the earliest labyrinths are based on the physical shape of the brain, like if you're looking down from the top of the head with the skull removed, or more probably the intestines. Yeah, they would use these ceremonies involved walking the labyrinth spiral path to the center as though it's a journey of dissolution into the cosmic womb and joining with the divine mother at the center, and then returning back out to the world as a symbol of spiritual rebirth.
Amazing. So when you say vortex, what do you mean by that?
Well, that spiral pattern that goes clockwise into the center and then comes back out again counterclockwise. So it's basically, it's a spiral. We see that archetypal pattern in, throughout nature. It's present in, like, you can see it in the shape of the galaxies, the gas clouds of planets, in our own cloud patterns and oceans, hurricanes, tornadoes, you know, it's in the structure of flowers and shells, and, you know, we'll be part of that conversation.
Well, actually, I'd like to go into that. You say it's based on sacred geometry.
Right. Well, sacred geometry is actually, it's the study of fundamental patterns and structures and processes that are at the foundation of reality and based in mathematical relationships and form. So sacred geometry shapes can be found in all of nature, and it includes this golden mean proportion, the Fibonacci spirals, hexagonal structures, crystal structures, etc. And so anyway, it's based in mathematics, and the mathematics were actually derived by Pythagoras in the 6th century before the Common Era, but the theory of sacred geometry was ostensibly developed by Plato in 5th century B.C. This vortex spiral is one of these sacred geometrical patterns that is at the basis of the labyrinth pattern.
So let's talk a little bit about how one goes about walking a labyrinth. What does it involve?
Sure. Well, it's really simple, actually. First of all, there are no rules, just suggestions. first idea is that you would set an intention for yourself, a question about something or a relationship to something or someone that you might like to explore. Allow yourself to enter with a blank mind and let any images that present themselves on your journey into the labyrinth be your actual topic. Also, mm-hmm. you can just simply walk the labyrinth as a physical exercise, nervous system balancing experience, which is why many schools and parks and hospitals have labyrinths painted or built into their onto their grounds. Anyway, the process of it is, before you enter, you might want to pause at the entrance and become aware of your breath, like you might do in any meditative practice. You're grounding yourself. You might consider that entering the labyrinth, you're entering sacred space. So if you want to mark the threshold with a gesture or a phrase, some people do the namaste thing or, you know, just a simple bow, then that's totally appropriate, but you don't have to. You walk at any speed that feels comfortable for you. And oftentimes there are other people walking the labyrinth as well. And that's okay. It's not meant to be the kind of thing where you're all by yourself necessarily, but there is a little bit of a protocol in walking the labyrinth when other people are there, which is that if you want to walk really slow, it's okay for somebody to pass you. If you want to walk a little faster, it's okay for you to pass them. And it's okay if somebody has to step outside the line just a little bit in order to let that happen. That's totally okay. You don't have to make eye contact with anybody if you don't want to. And then when you get to the center, you can stay as long as you want to. And when you leave the center, then you simply follow the path that you took in. When you conclude your journey, you're leaving sacred space. So if you want to repeat your gesture or make a little bow or something, you can, but you don't have. And so those are the fundamental logistics of walking the labyrinth. But in terms of the greater process of it itself as a metaphor, we talk about the threefold path of the labyrinth meditation walk. And so on our way in, we talk about it in terms of release. So we're releasing, we're letting go of the details of our everyday life. We're quieting the rational mind. We're beginning the process of opening to your intuition, your muse, your higher self, and the deeper knowing of the unconscious. So when you move, you're moving towards the center, and perhaps in the center, we consider this the stage or the phase of receiving. So you may feel calm, you may recognize some insights or clarity about your topic of your intention. Here is the place where we're imagining that you will be the most open to your intuition. However, that's not guaranteed. Some people, you know, everybody's different. Some people may get their insights when they've completely left the labyrinth and they're, you know, walking home or driving home, or people may get their insights on the way in. It's, you know, this is not a hard and fast fixed rule. It's just
exactly.
Kind of,
so it's not like this expectation, but it's more of an intention, and you just allow it to unfold as it does.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so then the final phase is the return. So then as we return from the center, we're following the same path out that we followed in. And it
can I just ask you a question about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So is it clear? So, like, for example, because how do you distinguish it? It seems maze-like. Is it clear the path that you followed in is the one that you follow out? Is that pretty clear to
There's
you?
There's only one path. A labyrinth is not a maze. A maze is set up intentionally to fool you and trick you into saying, oh, I found, you know, the dead end. A labyrinth, there is only one path.
And but you don't have to think about it. You just
don't
turn
have to
around and
it.
Walk out.
Exactly. You just turn around and follow the
And you
path
have to
out.
Trust.
You trust that you're going to find the way out. It's great. Yeah. So, and this return phase is the beginning of integrating your new insights into your conscious awareness. And it moves you from, this kind of altered state and your right brain, to move more into your relationship with the world, right? So in the labyrinth, there are the same number of turns to the right as to the left. Mm-hmm. And so it activates both sides of the brain, in a physical experience, right? So it invites a pattern-seeking brain, the right brain, as well as a symbolic mind, the left brain, to come forward. And so this creates a sense of balance and harmony, and while it opens us up to our creativity for knowing. So in that way, with the equal number of right and left turns, it integrates both the right and left brain.
Yeah, and, because that reminds me now that left and right brain theory has now been debunked. And while certain processes do occur in the left and the right brain, it's actually an integration of both sides of the brain that facilitates creative thinking.
Exactly.
And it sounds like this mimics that or brings it on, right?
Exactly. 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 That's exactly right.
So if we were to offer this process to a writer, you could perhaps set an intention to help you develop something in your creativity or deal with writer's block or, you know, it sounds like it does also something to the nervous system in terms of a calming, which obviously meditation does. Did you want to shed any insights or share any insights about how it could be used for writers?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I think that, you know, writers are often encouraged to write what they know. And that's important because the reader experiences a world that feels true because the writer really knows it from the inside and it's authentic to the individual experience of the writer. But at the same time, writers want to create characters and stories that appeal to a wider audience than just people like them. So it's important for writers to be able to tap into deeper aspects of their characters and their stories that resonate with themes and archetypes of the collective, right, of myth. So it makes the journey of this hero that they're writing about a story that many people can relate to, even in many different cultures. So by using the labyrinth as an opportunity to tap into your own access to the collective or the collective unconscious or your deeper knowing, you're actually opening to being able to invest the individuality of your own creations with the shared experience of the ages of the collective unconscious and the archetypes of our human experience. So I think it's a tremendously helpful opportunity for writers, you know, and, you know, they can go into the labyrinth with the, say, hey, you know, I have this idea, this feeling about a story, but I don't really know how to shape, I don't know what to say about it. And then the experience of walking the labyrinth is more about opening to their own creativity and allowing the right and left brain to kind of pull together images and feelings and thoughts and things that maybe have been floating around there, but they haven't really been focused. The exercise of walking the labyrinth allows you to focus your intention on a specific thing while being very wide at the same time. It's also very narrow, and it has a duration of time. So you walk in, you hang out in the center, and then you walk out. And so it's focused in a way that art, you know, the way we create art, we write a poem with a, you know, with a meter, we write it with a sort of a intensified languaging that we use. We write a novel with a beginning, a middle, and an end. So there's a prescribed, you know, form to it. And so the labyrinth helps us shape our ideas and creativity and brainstorming stuff into something with more shape.
Makes sense. But, you know, that actually leads me to a question. How long does it usually take, you know, granted that there's no set time, but generally from your experience, how much time does one walk the labyrinth?
Well, it depends on how fast you walk. And it also depends on the size of the labyrinth. So, like, for example, in my embodied labyrinth workshops, I use a seven-circuit Chartres cathedral-style labyrinth. So that takes less time than, say, the one, for example, at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, which is an 11-circuit. So that one will take longer. So depending on the amount of time that, how long it takes you to walk and how big the labyrinth is, you might imagine that it could take anywhere from a half an hour to 45 minutes if you're like really kind of taking your time and hanging
that
out in
sense.
The center. Yeah. So, but it doesn't have to take very long. You can run it if you want to. You don't have to do the whole thing. You can go straight to the center and then come back out. There's no rules. You can dance. It, you know, it's a wonderful, liberating thing.
So I should mention that both Catherine and I have this background in depth psychology and the study of, which incorporates the study of the unconscious. And we went to Pacifica Graduate Institute. And so you talked about the collective unconscious. I'm not sure that people know what that is. Just give me some, if you could just provide some insight into how walking the labyrinth could tap into the collective unconscious so that people can, you know, wrap their brain around that, so to speak.
I understand. Jungian depth psychology presupposes that the psyche, that there's a mind-body-spirit connection, and that spirit part or the psyche part of that is the part that is connected to that which is greater than ourselves. And so that goes both forward in time, it goes backwards in time, it connects us with this conscious and collective consciousness, right, that that is the culminant
stored memories, just everything
stored
that's ever
memories,
existed.
Experience of human culture, right? It's so, so because we have this channel, as it were, to access that, what we call deeper knowing, and the images from that come to us in the form of dreams or feelings. It can come in the form of bodily sensations, just, you know, thoughts, daydreams, or whatever. You feel like squiggling or doodling on your paper, and then all of a sudden you look at it and you go like, oh, my gosh, I had no idea. That was, you know, that was a picture of, you know, a mountain. Oh, I had no idea. Or whatever it is, you know, how that relates
right.
to you.
Right, and so you allow yourself to see what it's like in terms of what it connects with, and that itself brings on more ideas.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that the traveling into that, see, when we move in the labyrinth, it's really this kind of cool thing. The turns that are built into the labyrinth, we go on the right and then we go left, and we're not exactly sure necessarily which way we're going to be turning next. And sometimes we're closer to the center, and sometimes we're further away from the center. And gives us this feeling of like, oh my God, I don't know where I am, but there's only one path. You can't get lost. So it has the effect of unmooring us from our rational processes.
An altered state makes so much sense.
Yeah, a little bit of an altered state. Yeah. So the
that makes so much sense. Got it.
Right. So we So that when we're in, finally make it to the center, we're really at the peak or the depth of that that moment. And
so just in terms of brainwave patterns, like our conscious waking state, talking now, we're in beta. And then, you know, kind of when we get into creative states, it's alpha and sometimes beta. And obviously when we dream, we go into, you know, different altered states that mirror those brainwave patterns. And what I'm hearing from you is that this facilitates a shift, perhaps, into a different brainwave pattern that's more creative.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Fascinating.
And so, you know, part of when I do my workshops, I further facilitate that by starting out the group with, you know, just sort of a little connecting ritual of opening to sacred space, of like paying attention to metaphor in the surroundings and how that might relate to you. So we already start that dropping in process in the workshop before we actually even enter the labyrinth. But you don't have to. Just that moment where you take at the entrance and connect to your breath, that can be enough to help you. So just the intention of stepping across the threshold of the entrance, entering into sacred space, can drop you right down into that altered energy. So it's really kind of cool.
Wow. So you're based in Los Angeles, and I want you to share with us about your workshops in a moment. But when you do a labyrinth, you create your own. But what are some of your favorite labyrinths in L.A., if there are any?
Oh, you know what? My favorite one, really and truly, is the one that's at Forest Lawn in, what's that neighborhood called? My son used to live there. Something Park, Glassville Park. Anyway, it's the Forest Lawn that you, anyway, I could, painted onto cement, and it's up on the top of a hill, and you have this absolute panoramic view, not a total 360 degrees, but pretty close, and it's just really wonderful. So that's my all-time favorite. But then the Grace
Cathedral
starts. I want
to go to the one at Creed. I wonder if that's still there.
You know, I don't think it's there. I think that you can visit an archaeological site that says this is probably where it was. And the labyrinth in Crete, there's some speculation that probably what they meant by that was it was the castle of King Minos, and it was just he had so many rooms, and they were really complicated to get through, and so people kind of got lost. But the actual labyrinth is a labyrinth. You cannot get lost because there's only one path.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great. So how did you get into this? It's fascinating work. What is it that, how did you find it?
Well, the reason I got into it is I was working with, I had been working at the Institute for Girls Development with Dr. Melissa Johnson. And I often coach her in some of her talks. She had been doing talks about labyrinths and the healing properties of labyrinths and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was really cool. And I thought, wow, this is really interesting. And then she knew about my embodiment workshops, which I was already doing without labyrinths. And she encouraged me to partner with Peggy Burt, who is a labyrinth facilitator and also a yoga instructor and dance professional dancer, choreographer, and actually Peggy has choreographed some of my theater productions, which is a whole nother relationship. But anyway, so Melissa, Dr. Johnson encouraged us to collaborate on an embodied labyrinth workshop. And so our very first one we offered at the Institute for Girls Development down in their one of their basement workshop rooms, and we used the Seven Circuit Sharp style labyrinth for that, and includes art and journaling and all that kind of stuff. But it was just magical, and so we continued to offer them over time since, I guess, 2013 might have been the first one, 2012, and then last summer I decided it was time for me to actually go and get my own labyrinth training. Before, she was the one that did the labyrinth piece and the education about the labyrinth and all that. And I decided, well, you know, we need to be able to mix this up a little bit. Not fair for her to have to do all the heavy lifting. So I ended up going up to the Veritas organization in Petaluma and studied under Lauren Artress, who is an MSP.
Oh, so there's an actual place that you can study for this. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's called Veritas. It's in Petaluma, and you can look them up at veritas.org. And it's just an amazing organization. They teach all about labyrinths. They teach you how to make labyrinths.
Wow.
It's a very, very cool operation, and I want to encourage everybody to at least look at their website.
Well, tell us about your embodiment workshops and what you're planning so that people can, participate in them and where they can find out more about this.
Sure. Well, always people can go to my website, katherinebickley.com, and Bickley is spelled B-I-K-L-E, where I will advertise these things. But I have a labyrinth workshop coming up in the fall that celebrates the fall equinox, which is a time of balance and coming into a better balance with the different parts of your life and whatever. So it's an opportunity to do a meditation on that using the labyrinth. And that will be held at Monrovia Canyon Park in the little cabin on the 23rd of September from 1 to 4 o'clock. And then, of course, we have a workshop scheduled in November. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but
Yes, I will. I'm going to that September 23rd. That just sounds fabulous. I mean, it's such wonderful work. And you and I will be collaborating in Malibu at the Sarah Retreat November 12th, which will be specifically geared towards writers who are writing their stories and further developing their story ideas and using your process to help them also go deeper into that work. So I'm very excited about that as well. And I think the place that we picked in Malibu at the Sarah Retreat is just magical. They already have a labyrinth, but
I mean, and that's what, and the thing I think that's so wonderful is to be able to do, but the labyrinth, you can do it either indoors, you can do it outdoors, but when you have the opportunity to do something outdoors, something meditative like this, it just adds that piece where, you know, we visually take in this healing environment from nature,
the
sacred geometry of nature that surrounds us with the flowers and the, you know, the different structures and things, and the, you know, view out into the ocean in Malibu and in Monrovia Canyon Park. You have this beautiful oak trees that shade the canyon and the wildlife that comes and peeks in the windows when you're working in there. It's just really, it's really great.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
I feel very honored to have the opportunity to be able to offer these in such beautiful settings.
I know. Well, thank you so much for sharing this information with us and bringing this work out into the world. It's been enlightening for me, and I'm very happy that we're going to be collaborating together in the future.
Great. I'm looking forward to it too, Skylar. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
All right. And stay tuned for more episodes on ways to increase your creative thinking and inspiration and how the creative process works, and that's what we're all about. And on that note, we'll sign off. Thank you.
The Creative Writer's Way.
To touch the reader inside is to tap into where we live. It is common to us all. It is unique to us all. Finding that path is the hero's journey. The journey begins with you.
This is Dr. Skylar Madison. Find your story at skylarmadison.com.